I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So as the old song goes, it don't mean a thing if you ain't got that ring. Well, guess what? The Bucks are going to be handing out those rings to Tom Brady, the Lord of the Rings. That's coming up, that celebration. It's a private ceremony on July 22nd. That's just 2 days before the start of training camp. The Bucks start a few days early because, well, they start the season a few days early. They have the Thursday night NFL season opener against the Dallas. How about them Cowboys? And so we now have a date for the gala. They have sent out a save-the-date notice to their players or coaches, people in the organization, and we don't know where it is yet. The venue has not been announced. I guess they have a couple places in town that they have sort of contracted with and have some deals pending. But you can bet that it will be a very formal night. I attended this one from a red carpet standpoint back in the day. When the Bucks won in 2002, in August of, I think it was 2003, July 2003, they had it at the A La Carte Pavilion, which has since been sold and does not exist anymore. But I can remember that outside of just the winning the Super Bowl, like the night you win it, of course, is just a tremendous celebration and, you know, the confetti and the whole, you know, hoisting the trophy and all that. This, to me, there's the winning, there's the parade, which, you know, try to top the Tom Brady, you know.
Completing one final pass.
Yeah, right. Tossing it across the river and then the avocado tequila parade. Hard to top that. But this is the one that really puts goosebumps on guys' arms because, you know, you play the highlight tape. Everybody's there for one final time. There are some guys that have moved on to other teams. They'll be invited because it's before the start of any training camp because the Bucks start first. And so, you know, it's really one final, one shining moment to relive sort of what you accomplished in 2000. And then you get the prize, right? You get the box. And you open that box, and it's going to be spectacular, right? From what I hear about these rings. I know the Lightning may have set a new standard in terms of, I mean, it's hard to imagine, right? You could spend more money than Vinick did, right, on those things.
Ooh, what, $66,000 appraisal value on those, I believe?
Yeah, I find that hard to believe that these are going to appraise for that. But, you know, you never know. I mean, I would expect it to be representative of not just their last Super Bowl, but of the fact that they have two Lombardi trophies now. Very often teams put the number of Lombardi trophies on the face of the ring. I think that could be a possibility, and probably something representing the fact that they made history by winning it in the home stadium in Raymond James.
I would think that would be a part of this. But just think about this now. Our sports teams in town in the last April through July, the Rays have gotten their World Series or the AL Championship rings. The Lightning got their Stanley Cup rings, and the Bucks are getting their Super Bowl rings.
So, unreal.
I mean, the amount of jewelry and bling in this town is at all-time levels.
Yeah, and it's incredible. And I mean, you know, we've said it on this podcast. Everybody says it. Like, I don't know what's going to happen in the next 20 years. I don't know what's going to happen in 20 days after the last year we've been through. But I find it hard to believe, because I've done this a minute, so have you, that there is going to be a better time in Tampa Bay sports than there is right now, with a team going to try to repeat as Stanley Cup champions and look like they're very capable of doing so, with a Rays team that's leading all of baseball in terms of its record in the American League, and with a Bucks team that returns 22 starters and Tom Brady to try to defend their World Super Bowl championship. It just, and they're all doing it successfully. In other words, you know, I mean, the Rays started out kind of poorly, but look where they're at now. The Lightning 2-0 as we do this podcast heading into Game 3 against the Carolina
we're taping this before Thursday night's
Hurricane
game.
Yeah. So I mean, I think all of that, plus just the excitement of this upcoming NFL season, whereby as we're starting to see fans come back in all the games now, which, you know, the stadiums are starting to look different. It certainly will at Amalie. and it did in Carolina. Can you imagine, because it's going to happen, a complete sellout every single home game at Raymond James and predominantly Bucks fans in that building? It's going to be wild.
Oh, it's going to be an incredible season. You know, as you're seeing Amalie get, what, up to tonight's game, supposed to have about 13,500, I believe.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
If the Lightning get to the next round, potentially it's a full house.
Yep.
I don't know what the thinking is at this point, but you're seeing some teams around the NHL doing that. The Rays are opening up to, what, 20,000 now in the stadium?
That's correct.
So as we get down the stretch with the Rays, if you've got playoff meaning games or the playoffs, if they make
big
it that
series,
far, you know, you're going to see a sold-out Trop and finally getting to enjoy the success that these teams have had now for the last year plus. I mean, depending on the teams. I mean, the Bucks last year, but the Rays have been good for a couple of years. The Lightning, of course, for six or seven seasons now. Mm-hmm. But now getting to enjoy the fruits of that with championships and rings and hopefully more of them coming this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all possible, and it's just I'm glad those teams like the Lightning, like the Rays, have sort of duplicated where they were a year ago, so that you know you get they. You know, the other thing is, and you can speak to this, Steve. I mean, they did this in a bubble, which is had to be incredibly difficult, right? I mean, they talked about the time away from home, all of that stuff, and yet, I would think for the players, they had to have missed. Home or away, the energy that the crowd brings, because you can pipe as much sound as you want to. Sound doesn't have energy, right? But you can feel human beings getting excited. You literally can transfer that energy, and it's got to be like cathartic for them to go like, yes, this is how it's supposed to feel. This is what we want. Let's win it. You know, with the fans in the stands, so we can celebrate with them as we accomplish this.
Well, just to see those fans erupt and all jump up at once for a goal. Or, you know, when you're in the road and everyone's going nuts and crazy and you score a goal and they all go silent
and
sit.
Quiet. I mean, it's quiet, yeah.
You get that rush from either one of those. I mean, it's not just, you know, the road crowd can fire you up too when you're on the road. When you get to silence them or you get to do something that gets under their crawl and they start booing you or, you know, you lay a good check and they don't like it or, you know, whatever it is.
Or just what they're yelling at you profanely.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, listen, I still say this, and Philadelphia, as you know, is one of the best and worst sports towns in the world, right? I mean, listen, their fans, give them this, they're very passionate. But Eagle fan can be, in a profane way, just grotesque at times. And they were, you know, when the Bucks played up there in the NFC Championship game the year that they went to the Super Bowl. And, you know, Joe Giravicius, I'll never forget, you know, the tragedy that he had experienced with the birth of his son who had a birth defect that eventually cost him his life a few months later. And Joe wasn't able to join the team until the day before the game. And it was a pretty public, you know, situation with him. And you know, not all, but some Eagle fans were saying the worst things in the world during warmups and had no problem doing it. And I still say that motivated Joe. Joe Giravicius, for a lot of reasons, was just that kind of player anyway. But he caught a crossing route. They're down, I think, 3-0. He catches a crossing route. I have never seen him run as fast as he did. He ran the entire secondary, which had an angle on him, for a huge play. It had to be over 60 yards. And to this day, I think, you know, like to your point, when you're on the road, you hear things, right, that motivate you even from the opposing crowd. So, yeah, it's just really cool that, and especially for the fans, right? I mean, what a difficult, you know, the most Tampa thing ever that their teams would be in championships and win championships in a year where very few, if any, could see them do it. And now we can, you know, see everybody enjoy that. So that part is really cool. But the ring ceremony, listen, I just want to see that picture of Tom. I hope Tom takes all the rings out of the vault like he did in New England. You know he's going to, right? Going to put those six on, and then he's going to get that seventh one. He's going to put that seventh one on. The man's running out of fingers. I mean, he really is. I mean, if he wins three more, he's going to start putting them on his toes.
He's going to take off those Under Armours and, you know, really have a sponsorship for it to, you know, put them on the toes.
Go.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. But I hope he does that. I really do. I hope that he... You know that he gives us all a look at all that jewelry, but yeah, it's going to be a great night. And like I said, I look forward to seeing just the reaction of the players and the coaches and everybody that worked so hard to accomplish that. It's rare; you don't get to do it very often. It's the second time this franchise has done it. I think there's only like 9 franchises that have won more than one Lombardi Trophy. There's still some that have not won any, And it is really a great thing to celebrate. So we have that coming up on July 22nd. That's a Wednesday. That's 2 days before the start of training camp. And then pretty soon here, even before that, on July 14th, they will announce which game in which Monty Kiffin, the Bucs defensive coordinator, will be inducted into the Ring of Honor. He was elected to that last February 2020. But because of the pandemic and other things, they delayed the enshrinement ceremony until this year, which I think Monty deserves his day. There was no better character, and certainly if you look at the the consistency of a top 10, top 5 defenses when he was here under Tony Dungy and through John Gruden, or most of John Gruden's years, then you can understand why he is so deserving. He's still fun to talk to, and I can't wait to see all the players come back and celebrate his induction. It's rare for a coach, much less an assistant coach, right? There's head coaches in the Ring of Honor, John Gruden, John McKay, Tony Dungy. But to have a defensive coordinator go in like Monty is really special. So that'll be a fun time. So we'll know coming up here pretty quickly here on July 14th which game that the Bucs will celebrate that. Also, while we're on the Bucs talk right now, we're going to get to your questions in the mailbag segment in just a moment. We have some good ones, of course, for you, as usual. But one final thing, check out, if you will, in the Sunday Tampa Bay Times or online now on TampaBay.com. I did a story on O.J. Howard, which, you know, O.J. Howard is probably one of my favorite players to talk to. I guess I got to know him pretty well after he was drafted. I went to Alabama and hung out with his family and got to understand his story a little bit. He's from a very, very small town, Ottawaville, and it just, you know, it's kind of split evenly. If you know anything about Alabama football, between Alabama and Auburn, it's literally like right in the middle, like, you know, half the state on one side, you know, roots for Alabama, the other half for Auburn. But we know what O.J., you know, how he started out last year. Injuries have been a part of his story in the NFL. There's no question about that. But after Tom Brady came, I think he really did recommit himself, you know, to fitness and you know, to his focus and all of that, and was off to a terrific start. And, you know, he was really had a good rapport with Tom Brady, had spent a lot of time off the field with him, even going out to dinner with him and his wife. And so, you know, all of that kind of came to an end on October 4th. They played the Los Angeles Chargers, and there was about 11:05 remaining in the game. They were near the end zone. It was a game the Bucs fell way behind in and had to come back. And the game-winning touchdown, the one that put the Bucs ahead for the first time, was a pass to Keyshawn Vaughn, his only touchdown of the year. And that ball was supposed to go on a slant route to O.J. Howard, who had had a terrific game. But when he came out of his break, he just felt like somebody smacked him across the back of the leg, like you were taking a bat to him or something, you know. And he fell down, and he couldn't really put a lot of pressure on his foot. And so, of course, we know it turned out it was a ruptured Achilles, and that's a significant injury. It takes about 9 months to heal. So, you know, you go from just the absolute devastation of that, and then of course you know what you missed out on. We know the rest of the story now. He missed out on a Super Bowl run and all of that. But a week later, after his injury, he got to experience the birth of his first child, and it was 8 days actually to be exact. And if you look at these pictures that we have of this little girl, if your heart doesn't melt, I don't know what will do it. But Kaliana Mia is her name. And him and his girlfriend, Chanel Sideboard, had her, and they call her Callie. But it's a story about how, you know, there are blessings that come along at the right time. Children are always a blessing, but she came along at the perfect time for her dad. And if you're a professional athlete and your child is born during a season or a busy off season or whatever, sometimes you don't get to spend the sort of time that you'd want to spend with a newborn. Where so much of that bonding takes place. And O.J., you know, turned his situation into one where he could take advantage of that. And, you know, I just the stories he tells about her sitting on his lap on fall Saturdays while they're watching Alabama games and, you know, how chill she is, because you know anything about OJ, he's about as laid back as you can get without being horizontal. So I just think that it's a neat story. Talk to his girlfriend, talk to OJ, and OJ's family is one that, you know, his dad, he teases Brady all the time. His dad is Tom Brady's age, and his mom and his dad have adopted a couple of foster children that they had, and they're now their children. And so it's just a loving family that, you know, that has done a lot for kids, and now he has one of his own. And so it's how, you know, he's managed fatherhood and the game of football and his comeback. You know, he expects to be ready for the training camp. I don't know what if anything he'll do in the mandatory minicamp, you know, coming up on June 7th, but there's a possibility that he might do something. But we'll just have to see. But everything has gone great with the rehab. And listen, if they can get O.J. Howard back to go with, you know, Gronkowski and Cam Brate, you know, and those tight ends with all the other weapons that they've added or that they have returning, and then, you know, guys like Giovanni Bernard, I mean, this offense is only going to be even better because, you know, if he can stay healthy, he's proven that he can be a really great weapon. So check that out on TampaBay.com. You can read it now, or you can watch for it in your Sunday Tampa Bay Times. All right, so we got a bunch of questions in the mailbag.
Yeah, and we'll start with the Rays here, who, as we're taping this podcast, are leading 9-2 in the seventh, as Aaron Boone had to remind the umps that he's got a bunch of savages on his side, and he got thrown out. So,
what was that all about? What was he complaining
about?
I'm
not even
Balls
sure.
And strikes?
I'm not even sure what he was complaining about. I mean, we've got it muted, obviously, as we're sitting here watching it.
Well, I watched a good part of the game, and one thing I thought I think the umpire squeezed a couple batters earlier in the game, or a couple pitchers for the Yankees, and they resulted in some great, you know, some great rallies and a couple home runs and you know, where they thought they would have been out of the inning, that sort of thing. So just watching the game, I think maybe he had a problem with the home plate umpire in his strike zone. But, you know, it's the same for both sides, as they say. And
well, if you get those savages out, obviously it's not fair. So
well, listen, they're struggling. I mean, the funny thing is, I mean, the Yankees have whatever they've done this year successfully, it's been because of their pitching. Their pitching has been very, very good. You know, so from that standpoint, they just haven't put together a lot of great at-bats. Now, they did the other night. I think they worked the Rays for about 180 pitches. I mean, every count was 3-2. But they just haven't got enough guys going very well to put together hits. And, you know, the Rays, if they manage to hold on and they split this series, you know, that's what you want to do on the road. So they, you know, they had a chance. The Yankees had a chance to win 3 out of 4. Yankees put the Rays put a stop to them in the afternoon game. So good for them. It's been a nice run.
Yeah. Well, Brian had asked, is it fair to state that the Rays will only go as far as G-Man Choi is healthy? Since his return to the lineup, the Rays have been much more productive.
Well, I think that guy has been a huge boost for them. And, you know, we've talked about this, how he lengthens the lineup for them. And I think he just adds energy. You know, after losing a guy like Willy Adames, I think they're fortunate that G-Man came back because he sort of provides the fun to that clubhouse, the energy. You know, it is a business. It is a grinding business. It is tough day in, day out, you know, to battle your own personal demons. And, you know, you go through slumps and ups and downs and things like that. And G-Man is always seems to have a good attitude, and he swung the bat as well as anybody. I mean, it's hard to believe that this guy, you know, had to go out and had abbreviated spring trainings and you know, kind of in and out of rehab, and he comes up here to the majors and gets not just hits, but big hits, huge hits, and started from the first at-bat that he came back. So I don't know that they're going to go as far as he takes them. I think this team is still built largely on pitching and defense. You know, like this Yankee series, they did not hit very well until the last game with runners in scoring position, to say the very least. But they managed to be in every game. They play a lot of close games. And again, I think it's the pitching that keeps you in that. But, you know, he has definitely helped their lineup. And if Zunino continues to hit, obviously Austin Meadows is red hot right now.
Five RBI on Thursday.
Yeah, five RBI, and just, you know, he had such an enormous month of May in terms of hitting home runs, and he's continued that now. I think he's got like, what, 14 or something like that? Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's back to his form from 2 years ago in terms of driving the baseball. So, I mean, look, this Rays team is, as the late Denny Green would say, they're who we thought they were. They're one, if not right now, the best team in the American. Are they always going to be this hot? No. But I'll tell you what, barring some injuries, and especially to a guy like G-Man, who also, you know, plays a pretty good first base when they need him to, even though I think Diaz has done a nice job. So, I mean, I don't know that I expected the team to sort of turn around. Maybe it coincided, but I don't think it's an accident that he's in this lineup and they're hitting the ball again.
Well, he also gives you great at-bats, too. Even the bats he maybe gets out or doesn't get that big hit, but he sees a lot of pitches. He always has a good at-bat. You know, you never sit there and go, oh, that was a bad at-bat by G-Man.
Other night against Chapman when he came in, you know, he went 3-2 on him, but, man, he fouled off a bunch of pitches. He ended up striking out. But, yeah, he was grinding it.
Yep. Matt had asked, at this point, is the only way the Rays stay in Tampa Bay without splitting a season with Montreal or moving is if Stu Sternberg were to sell the team? Is that even a possibility?
Well, I don't think Stu is going to sell the team. A possibility, I guess anything's possible, right? If you got the right offer,
someone pays the right price.
That's right. My house, I always say this, my house is not for sale. I have just spent 2 years redesigning it and doing a lot of different things, and I have no intentions of selling. If someone walks to my door today and wants to offer me $1 million, maybe a little south of that, I would probably be packing my bags. Yeah, everybody has a price. Is he putting it up for sale? Does he want to sell it? No. I don't know as far as, like, is the only way they stay in Tampa is if Stu sells or they take the Montreal plan, et cetera. I still don't see how that plan is viable. I might be in the minority. I really don't know at this point. I think it's hard to build one ballpark in one city in this country, much less two ballparks in two. Now, I recognize maybe you wouldn't need all the bells and whistles if you're only going to play here from February and spring training through the end of May or May. Maybe there's an outdoor stadium in that scenario, and there's ways of lessening that commitment from a public money standpoint. But then you also have to question who's going to make that commitment if you're only here for half the time. And I'm not saying it's not possible. I would just point out, and I know that this was not Tampa Bay's team or Montreal's, but, you know, watching the Toronto Raptors, watching the Toronto Blue Jays be homeless for a season, I got to believe, there's no reason not to believe that hasn't had and continues to have an impact on the men who play the game. These are human beings. These are people that have families, wives, mortgages, kids, schools. You know, all those things are difficult to figure out for a baseball player, much less if he's really sort of in two places or homeless, as the case may be with the Blue Jays or the Raptors. So, you know, to me, there's a competitive disadvantage, not an advantage. I know that Stu likes to talk about how great it would be, you know, for both cities and, you know, the sister city idea, and you could go to Montreal and they could come here. You know, we're not talking about the player. I still want to hear from the players. I still want to know what they think. Now, anything can be cured with enough money, right? I mean, you pay somebody enough money, they'll do almost anything when it comes to playing sports. But, you know, you see the, you know, NFL is going to add 17th game. One day they may have 18, you know, so anything's possible. But I still believe, and we won't know until maybe the zero hour, right, when the leverage is all gone and they got to make a decision, we still may see the best offer come forward. And I know there's going to be a new mayor. I know in St. Petersburg, I know they're hoping for talks again. So I'm not ruling out that they don't figure this out either in Tampa or St. Petersburg. I think it's more likely that they stay. But there are cities out there, there's no question, that would love to have a Major League Baseball team. How many of those of late have you seen, you know, how many franchises have you seen move? You've seen it in football. We've seen franchise movement a lot in football in terms of the Chargers leaving, you know, San Diego and going to Los Angeles, you know, the Rams moving back to L.A. from St. Louis. You know, that has occurred. Those are stadium issues. This is a stadium issue. But football, to me, is a I don't know. It just seems like an easier sell in some respects. I don't know why. It just does. You just don't see a lot of baseball teams moving.
Baseball's had one team move since 1972.
Right.
That was the Expos to Washington.
Yeah, so why, you know, and you may see the A's move. I mean, look, I think they're right there with Tampa Bay. They may be a few paces ahead of them in terms of franchise.
Well, here's the other thing, too. And, you know, baseball would prefer both teams stay put for several reasons. One, you know, San Francisco's top five television market. Granted, you know, you've got two teams there, the Giants and Oakland, but that market's one of the biggest television markets. Mm-hmm. Tampa Bay is like the 12th or 11th biggest market. 11th. If you add in Orlando, it becomes the top 10, essentially. Which the Rays do very well in the Orlando market.
Right.
So what market are you looking at? Vegas, San Antonio, Portland, Nashville, Charlotte. Those are all in the mid-20s or lower television markets.
Yeah.
Particularly in Tampa, and this area is growing fast. It's not like it's where it is and it's not growing. This whole state of Florida is growing. I mean, it's adding how many hundreds of people a day essentially are moving to Florida. So you know, and secondly, with baseball, they would like to expand two teams. If Oakland and Tampa Bay move, there is two less markets available to bid on expansion teams, which the NHL got $500 million from Vegas and $650 million for Seattle. What do you think a baseball team would garner for expansion fees? $1.5 billion?
Be huge, yeah.
You know, that goes directly in the owner's pockets, by the way.
Yes, it does.
So $1.5 billion, let's say, divided by 30 teams. How many millions of dollars is each owner pocketing because of expansion?
Right.
And if you do that for two teams, that's maybe you're at $3 billion. But if, say, Vegas or Nashville both have teams move to them, there's two less markets that have a chance to bid, your expansion fees go down.
Yeah.
So baseball would prefer teams stay put. And you've seen that over time where the only team that's moved in the last 40, almost 50 years – is the Expos, which baseball had to basically buy and then move to D.C.
Right.
That's the only team they've moved. Baseball teams have stayed put, while other sports, football, basketball, hockey, have had a lot of teams move. Baseball doesn't want to move teams.
Oh, and what was that city again that moved?
Montreal.
Mm-hmm. And where does Stu Sternberg want to move? Montreal. Listen, I mean, it'd be like if Tampa Bay were to lose the Rays, do you think the next expansion opportunity would be Tampa Bay? Probably not.
Well, unless you've got somebody here that's going to come up with enough cash to do that, then yes. But
right. But I'm just saying, you have a team, so.
No, I don't think baseball wants to move. That does not mean Stu doesn't want to move.
Oh, I'm convinced Stu wants to go.
Right. Well. Yeah.
Or have somebody build him a all the bells and whistles stadium with public money.
I don't know if Stu is so set on I want to move. He wants the best stadium deal he can get, whether it's here, Montreal, two stadiums, move to Nashville or wherever else. I don't know he's convinced he wants to move. I think he's just looking for the best deal, period. So I think he's more willing to move than baseball is. Not saying baseball wouldn't let them move the team, and baseball has to approve any moves. Mm-hmm. So it's a long way from over, and especially with the new mayor coming in St. Pete, and you know. But the thing is wherever you move, there's not a lot of public appetite for public spending on stadiums right now.
Yeah, I don't care what city you're talking about. There's so many problems in these cities, whether it's police, schools, you know, fire, you name it. I mean, even Hillsborough County. The county of Hillsborough, when you look at their school system and the number of people they had to lay off, teachers and administrators, and the millions and millions of dollars they had to take out of their budget, school buses, you know, not being able to be as widespread for pickups and things like that. I mean, you're talking about, a real day-to-day problem. I know we all get wrapped up in sports because that's what we do, right? I get paid to cover sports and I've been a fan for my whole life, but it's been how I feed my family. So I have a different perspective but the general public, I mean, what is it? 1 out of 3, right? I mean, we tend to think that we all are sports fans. We're not. People have lives and they have a lot of other priorities that aren't related to baseball, football, or basketball or hockey. And so, you have to consider all of that. And it's difficult, I think, for any metropolitan area to devote a lot of, and it does take a lot of public money, unless there is, you know, I think the stadiums, some of those that have been built of late, I always go back to San Francisco, is if you have a developer who's sitting on property that wants to raise You know, the area wants to raise its property tax rates. If that developer wants to develop the land around a stadium and get businesses and make his property more valuable because of the arrival of that stadium or the construction of that stadium, sometimes a developer will find it in their best interest to partner with a major league team or a city or both to help that happen. It worked in San Francisco. So I don't know how these deals get done. My experience is they don't get done until the very end, until the leverage is, you know, one team or the other, but like in one side or the other, but it's 0 hour. And I think this will come down to that. I really do. I can remember, you know, the Rays or St. Petersburg was trying to attack the Chicago White Sox, and Comiskey Park was crumbling around them on the south side. And the governor of Illinois, they were gone. I went up there. I interviewed everybody. The White Sox were going to take this deal because, the TROP was already constructed. And they moved. They had a legislative meeting, and the state had to put up the money for the new Comiskey Park. And they moved the clock back. It was supposed to be over at midnight. If it got to midnight, the governor went up there and literally moved the hands of the clock backwards until they could get a deal for the new Comiskey Stadium. So, and we built stadiums all over the country being used as leverage. So I just think it's going to come down to the last minute. And if I had to guess, the Rays will stay here. I don't know where. When I say here, I don't know if it's Tampa, St. Petersburg. I think at the end of the day, they end up staying in Tampa. I've always believed that.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, we'll switch to the Lightning, and as we tape this, it's before Game 3, so Game 3 will already be done by the time you're hearing this. But Brian had asked, the Lightning will now face their fifth goalie in the playoffs, as the Carolina Hurricanes are going to Peter Mrazek instead of Alex Nedeljkovic for Game 3. What does this show more about how desperate both opponents are because they went down 2-0 at home, or is the other team hoping to find a hot goalie to get wins?
You know, the Mrazek thing, I mean, you know, when you watch those games that the Lightning won up there, I don't know that you could really say. I mean, there was one goal that might have been a little soft in game one.
The second goal of game one that was the game winner. That one. Nedeljkovic would like that one back for sure.
That one you'd like to see him get back if you were him. But, I mean, they're low-scoring games. You know, there's been some good shots. The Florida Panthers, they had a two-goalie system. I mean, in other words, they weren't. You know, this wasn't something new to them. They had they had played a couple of goalies all year. Now, when they turned to the kid, you know, and he turned out to win a game for them, I just think that's, you know, they just had a lot of confidence in him and wanted to put him in that situation. He responded, so they gave him the next game. So that might have been a little bit of desperation there. But in this instance, I'm not sure why they're going to Mrazek, to be honest with you. Maybe just because they're down 2-0 and hope. I think teams do that when they're trying to turn their fortunes. I think that what can you change, right? You can't change all the defensemen or all the forwards or all the center. I mean, you know, you can change your goaltender. It's sort of like quarterback, but maybe they're looking for a spark, I suppose. I mean, Mrazek's had plenty of experience in the playoffs before.
I think it's, yeah, and he's had some success against the Lightning back in 15 and 16 when he was with the
Red Wings.
Right.
That's right.
I think it's purely just looking for a spark at this point. You're down 0-2 on the road. Nedeljkovic is not why you've lost the two games. I mean, maybe you could say game one because he gave up that game-winner goal that you'd like back. But the fact is they've scored two goals in two games, and you're not going to win many playoff games doing that. I mean, playoff games generally aren't 5-4, but you'd like to get three goals a game to win. And, you know, and the Hurricanes aren't getting it. The Lightning are playing very good defense. And you know, maybe the Lightning aren't scoring as much as they'd like, but they're defending really well.
Yeah,
and while Carolina had a lot of shots in game two, there weren't a lot of grade A scoring chances out of those shots.
No.
You know, that the Lightning have defended very well in this series. I think it's just purely looking for a spark, looking for a change. Mm-hmm. Maybe in talking to Nedeljkovic, he just needed a break. I mean, you know, you're not in that room. You're not in those conversations. But I think it's really just look, the Lightning are in an enviable position. When you look around the league, how many teams go back and forth with goalies and that? There's no question at Tampa Bay. I mean, you know, right. You listen to pregame scrums, you know, the press conferences of all the teams and, you know, Vegas. Is it going to be Fleury or is it going to be Leonard starting? Mm-hmm. Carolina, is it going to be Mrazek or Nedeljkovic? Florida, you know, which one of your three? The Islanders are going back and forth on goalies. The Lightning, you never even ask that question. It's never who's in goal tonight. Because you know, it's Vasilevsky. You know, when you have a goalie that good, it's a very enviable position because there's never a question of who's going to be back there. Even if he has a bad game, you know he's going to be back there for the next game, period. It's for the Lightning and particularly the defense, but even the whole team because, you know, in the playoffs, defense is about all five skaters on the ice, not just the two defensemen. But you know who's back there. You know how good he is, and it makes playing in front of him so much easier because of that.
I think he's everything. I think he's the reason they're on this run. I think he's the reason they won the Stanley Cup a year ago. I'm not saying they don't have great players. I'm not saying that they don't have, you know, Nikita Kucherov is one of the best in the world because he is. But from the limited knowledge I have of hockey, man, when you got a guy that's the best in the world as a goaltender the way Vasi is, and he somehow – here's the other thing, Steve. He steps it up in the playoffs. Like, he's even better. Now, the Florida series was crazy, right? It was up and down. I don't think they defended very well as a team. I think they got into a track meet with 1,000-odd man rushes, and he wasn't able to stop as many as he is now. But when they commit to playing well around him, and even in those games, they're going to give up about 3 or 4 odd man rushes or some chances where, you know, Fassie's just going to have to stop it. You know, they rely on that, and more times than not, almost every time, in fact, he comes through. And that is such a luxury that other teams don't have. You know, so many times you make a mistake, it's in the back of your net. With Vasi, it's not automatic. It just isn't. In fact, it's pretty damn impossible to do, even when you do have the man advantage. So I've just never seen, you know, a team, you know, rely on him, and he starts their offense in terms of, you know, their defensemen can pinch up. I mean, it's just so many things he makes happen for them. But it's difficult, man. I mean, don't you think, too, that it gets into the heads of the other teams when he plays the way he plays in the postseason? Don't you think they squeeze the sticks a little harder?
I think sometimes they look for the perfect shot and then miss the net. Or,
yeah,
you know, you're trying
don't
to
shoot enough.
You're or, trying to you be know. So fine with your shot at times instead of just putting it on net at times.
Right.
Yeah, I absolutely think. I mean, it is such. It's, you know, because you get to the playoffs and you know, there's usually only one or two other games on in hockey. So if you follow a lot of the beat writers around the league, you know, all of a sudden now they get to watch whole games or series of your team that normally, you know, they see twice a year when you play that whatever team they're covering.
Yeah.
And the amount of people just that I've seen on Twitter, you know, beat writers and the hockey people around the league just going, Vasilevsky's not even human. They just sit there and marvel at how good he is and how
calm
and how he overcomes mistakes that the defense makes. And not that they're making a ton of them because they're actually playing really good defense right now. But but when they do make a mistake, you don't have to panic because you know who's behind you,
right.
And there's a good chance he's going to stop it, even though I just screwed up or made an errant pass or whatever it is. You know, whatever I did that I shouldn't have done in my own end. I know who's behind me, and it's okay. And it gives you confidence to go make plays, too.
Absolutely. And I can see – I think he's – what is he, 97 out of – or something like 96
97 is the last 99 shots or something.
There you go. Yeah, something crazy about it. I mean, 97 out of 90. I mean, think about those numbers. They're just – and maybe they weren't all great scoring chances, but still, you're
some
stopping
were.
Them.
Some were.
Yeah, there's shots on goal, and a lot of them were great shots, and a lot of them – A normal goalie or a very good goalie or an above-average goalie may not have stopped them. He's the best in the world. He right now is the best in the world. And if he wins a Stanley Cup, if he wins two Stanley Cups in a row, the way he plays and the reason why they win, and he's in like the amount of confidence he gives that entire team and how he turns these games, I mean, you're talking about he's still, what, 25 years old, 26 years old? I mean, the guy's, you know, a relative. He could play another 10 years.
Yep.
You know? I mean, think about the career, the resume he's put together already. He's almost a Hall of Fame goaltender, you know? He went two Stanley Cups, and he could have won the MVP last year, right?
Well, and we know he's a finalist for the Vezina Trophy, which is the best goalie.
That would be his second, right?
But he's the finalist for the fourth straight year. No one's done that since Martin Brodeur was nominated five straight times as a finalist, which is 20 years ago or so.
Right. I think Brodeur is the best example, the best comparison, is the arc that he's on right now.
You hope. I mean, you know, and you know, look, you know that you've got a lot of this Lightning core locked up for a while. I mean, you know, from Hedman to Kucherov to Point to Cirelli, you know.
The young players look pretty good too, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, they, you know,
Russ Colton.
Russ Colton. Matthew Joseph's had a good year this year. Hasn't played in the playoffs yet, but,
right.
You know, you've got a lot of this core around, and you've got Vasilevskiy back there. I mean, there's no reason to think this team isn't going to be competing for championships for many years to come.
As long as he's between the pipes, you got a chance. Simple as that.
So, look at Montreal with Carey Price and how they upset Toronto.
There you go. Yeah, it's a good question. I think they're going to be fine, and I imagine they're just trying to shake it up with Mrazek. Yep.
Brian had asked a second question about the Lightning. He said, if David Savard can get healthy enough to play, do you see the Lightning defense getting even better?
Well, I mean, they traded for him for a reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they want him on the ice. So, yeah, the answer to that is, yeah, they've gone short with some defensemen, I think, because of Savard being out, right?
Well, Luke Shen has stepped in, and I think Luke Shen has played very well in the series.
Right.
I think, as we saw through the Florida series, I think Savard was finally starting to get his feel for this team. And you know, it seemed like, you know, most of the regular season after they traded for him, we know Savard's a good defenseman. He's not the fastest. He's not the fleet of foot.
Right.
But you could see he was thinking on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything was a tick slow for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look, he's never going to skate up the ice like Hedman and that. But his decision-making, you know, it's where do I go with this puck? Where's my teammate supposed to be? Where's my partner? It's a different system than they run here in Columbus. And it seemed like, particularly in the Florida series, he started to find that groove. And he started playing some of his best hockey with the Lightning. And then he gets hurt. And, of course, he's going to miss game three again tonight. We're taping this beforehand. But John Cooper had said it's going to be same lineup, so he's going to be out again. I don't know when he'll be back, although he has skated in practice a couple times this week. So, but anytime you can get a defenseman of that caliber back, yes, it should help you improve your defense. Although I think Luke Shen has done very well filling in his place, and I don't think you've seen a huge drop-off. I think they're playing very well defensively in this series.
That's an understanding. I mean, this last game, if you could copy that template, you know, you'd win the series 4-0. Simple as that. You know, the thing about when you win two on a road, I mean, it's very hard to come back right and win the next, you know, four out of whatever is it going to be, four out of five to win the series. But I do wonder, like, when the Lightning are at home, whether or not there's pressure might not be. I would always want to start a series on the road, by the way. I don't think home ice is very good for you because you have to play at home. And there's an expectation you're going to win. And when you don't, it's sort of like a huge deflating thing, right? If you lose game one on the road, everybody's like, all right, well, see if they can get, you know, get one of these, and then you've got home ice back. Lose game one at home, and then all of a sudden you're gripping for game two.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wonder if the Lightning don't try sometimes to put on more of a show for their home crowd. I don't know if that's been a thing or not. I really don't. I don't have no evidence to prove that or disprove it or whatever, because they're playing well both places now. But I would think that, you know, you're a little more hyped up maybe with your home crowd. I don't know.
I mean, we had that stat after game three of the Florida series that they had lost six of their last seven home playoff games at Amalie Arena. Now, since then, they went on and won game four and six against Florida. So they've won their last two going into tonight's game.
That's over, yeah.
Yeah, so there may be some of that. Some of it just may be, look, I mean, and now we're getting back to tickets and things like this, but, you know, players have often said on the road, you just go and focus on hockey. At home, you've got the family, you've got ticket requests, you've got this,
absolutely.
You've got, there's just lots going on. And, I think particularly at the beginning of the series, the pressure's on the road, on the home team.
Well,
the road team comes in going, I just need to win one of two, where the home team's going, I need to win both.
That's right.
And you start getting behind in game one, and then it's like, whoa, wait a minute. You know?
Right.
So, I think the pressure is. I think home ice in hockey is less than in the other sports for home court advantage or home arena or stadium, whatever
that's
you want to call it.
That's what they say,
But, you know, the Lightning have played very well on the road in the playoffs under John Cooper. They have always been a very good road team on the playoffs.
Yes, they have.
All right, we'll wrap up on this. And we have a few mailbag questions we'll carry over to next week, too. But we'll wrap up on this one. And Les asks, Rick, what are your thoughts on Dan Mullen's contract extension? Do you feel he's worthy to be in the same pay grade as the likes of Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney?
No, I don't. But you know, you make whatever they'll pay you. I'm not begrudging what Dan makes. Good for him. But he's at like $7.5 million, which is a lot of lettuce. Here's what I think about Dan Mullen. I think he's done a good job. You know, I was talking to Matt Baker about this, and he's right. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And so for some people, they're like, wow, I'm really a big Dan Mullen fan. I think he's great. He's going to win us a lot of games and probably a national title. But here's the thing. You know, they've been to 3 New Year's Day 6 games. Okay, great. They've been to an SEC title game. They lost it. Okay, pretty good. They went 8-4 last year. That's not good, right? It's just not. And the thing is, I mean, he was hired to win national championships. The University of Florida would like to start by winning an SEC title. Well, to do that, you're going to have to get by Alabama one day, right? And that's difficult for anybody. But that's the league you're in, right? And none of it's easy. LSU. The other thing, Dan Mullen has lost 2 out of 3 to Georgia. If you can't beat Georgia, you can't get to the SEC title game, okay? And I think that Kirby Smart is putting together a pretty damn good program up there that's gonna give Florida all kinds of trouble over the next few years. So this is year 4 for Mullen. You know, you've had essentially an entire recruiting class now that, you know, could have been here from their freshman year to their senior year. Let's see now. Let's see what this year is so important in my mind. Maybe less so for the boosters who just gave him a big extension for a number of years. But in my mind, this will kind of tell the tale because, you know, maybe Kyle Trask wasn't your Dan Mullen type of quarterback. Well, you got him now, right? You've got your Dak Prescott. You've got your guy. The style of offense you want to run. We know the problem has been the defense. Did you make some substantial changes there on the coaching staff? No. Let's see. But I'm not as crazy about Dan Mullen as probably Florida fans are. I see him as a pretty good coach, maybe even a very good coach. I don't think he's done a bad job by any means, but I do think there's a lot of stuff that comes with him. You know, the showboating, you know, sort of the antics, on the field with other players, I don't have any appetite for. Like, just win games, man. But if you're the University of Florida, you know, you want to win a national title like Spurrier did, like Urban Meyer did. That's what you're here for. That's the bar. Sorry, that's the job you have. And until he can show that he can, we know he can win 10 games. Can you win 12? Let's see you win 12 every year, you know, and get into that picture. So that's sort of where I'm at with Dan Mullen. I wouldn't have given him $7.5 million a year because I don't think he's in that conversation. But again, it's whatever Florida fan thinks or Florida booster thinks, actually. All right, thanks for your questions. We'll get to more of those mailbags again next week, and it's going to be an exciting week. Of course, the Rays are done with their series against the Yankees. They split that one, and we'll have more comments about the Lightning series against the Carolina Hurricanes as we go on. It's going to be a busy weekend, so check us out again on Monday. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.